I love a good montage. We grew up with 80s movies where there was always that moment where the team goes from really terrible to extreme success in a 2-minute montage of practice and trial and error. And the 80s movies were great with this, and I love a good montage. There'd be that moment where somebody's getting ready for a date or something, and they'd come out in 10 different outfits, and they'd be ridiculous each time. I love watching transformation, and I can watch a movie like The Bad News Bears and almost tear up watching a montage scene. You guys, the beard was driving me crazy, is what happened, and that's why it's gone. For those of you wondering, oh, that's what's different about him. But I always do it in montage style when it goes. It always, you know, it's the full beard, and I know there's like full actual terms for all the beard stuff, but I've kind of made up my own over time. So like I started with the disgraced Civil War general. That was the style. And then that kind of disappears, and then so I get rid of the sideburns and I just have this, and that's the Wild West, Wild Bill, cowboy and Indian show look that I have going on there. And then I get rid of that, and then I've got just the mustache that comes down this way. Like, you know, that cool one that's I call the dropping the big block into the Trans Am this weekend look. And then eventually it all comes off, and that's called the, man, I really shouldn't have shaved my beard off look. It's a hard thing. It's a quick transformation when you go from, like, Paul Bunyan to Dennis the Menace. Like, how can I at once look like I'm 50 and 15 at the same time? And it just, and I'll tell you, the gospel lesson made me laugh today because it talks about the wind blowing where it will. And as soon as you shave, there was like a blanket for my face, and now I feel the wind blowing wherever it wants. And it's a very strange phenomenon. This time Sam helped, though. He was like kind of excited about doing the clippers. But I knew he had to stop when he's like, okay, now let's do something with your bangs. Oh. And I'm like, oh, I have no extra hair to spare up there. Please, please don't do that. What bangs, right? Anyway. We love that kind of transformation. We love those kind of changes in our lives, don't we? We love to create ourselves. If you don't believe me, check on how the hair dye industry is doing or the tattoo industry is doing. And that's not to say there's good or bad or right or wrong to any of that. In fact, in some ways, if you consider that we are made in the image of God, our Creator, and that's not just some sort of anthropomorphic classification, that we are made with who He is. He, as Creator, has endowed within us that kind of creativity that makes us want to make things. We make art. We build amazing architecture. We want to rebuild ourselves. And so often we do that. You know, who doesn't love a good montage, for goodness sakes? The problem, though, is when we do it and we become our own idols. When we forget the fact that that gift was given by our Creator and we become creators unto ourselves. When what we do to transform ourselves elevates us into these tiny G gods. We are certainly made to create, but only in ways to glorify our Creator, rather than ways to glorify ourselves. So often we do these things to elevate ourselves, and I think when we go to our gospel today, maybe that's what's happening with Nicodemus. So much has been said about this passage. We see it at baseball games. We see it all over the place. We see it at the tattoo parlors that are thriving in this industry. So much has been said about it, but if you really consider that this happened, this actually happened. There was a man, a teacher, who spent his life gaining knowledge and information. And in the dark of night, he goes to the house where Jesus is staying. I don't think by torchlight, I think he does it quietly. He does it so nobody sees it. Quietly, I say. I didn't even notice them. I live with so much noise, you guys. That was nothing. Okay. But they go in the quiet of the night, and they hide. Nicodemus hides. He goes alone. And he goes to Jesus. And I think what happens is that Nicodemus is interested in elevation, in education, and not in recreation. And I say this because so often when I'll talk to somebody about Jesus, I get a lot of pushback. How can this stuff be? How can that actually be? And they throw up the roadblocks. And finally I go and I say this. If God showed himself, if he just appeared and he said, look, here's the proof. Here's the hand. Here's my hands. Here's my side. You know, all this stuff. Here is the proof. Would you then believe? And I think, honestly, there are people who would probably say no. There is some sort of roadblock that keeps us from belief. And Nicodemus starts by saying, I've seen all the things. Clearly you're from God. I've seen the testimony of your healings as a sign that you are from God. But when God offers him this call to be born again, Nicodemus throws the roadblocks. How can you be born again? You're an old man. That's possible. How can that be? God has revealed himself, and Nicodemus is throwing up reasons why he shouldn't believe in this revelation. And I understand it. Because this call to be born again, it's this sense of out of our control. Yes, our decision to say yes to follow Jesus. But it is out of our control to be recreated in him. If we are made in the image of God, our creator, isn't it only his alone to recreate? But Nicodemus is in there for some sort of life enhancement transformation that he can sort of put on his resume, sat at the feet of Jesus, heard the right things. But this idea of being born again to being recreated not by his own ability, but by God's is a roadblock for him. It's a hurdle. Isn't it interesting that we as humans love to create, but the idea of being recreated is terrifying? The idea that when God reveals something that's a little bit uncomfortable to us, we want to put up some roadblocks. He couldn't have really meant that, right? We love transformation, recreation, montages, but we don't want to be recreated. We don't want to give up that power and authority. But if Jesus stood in front of us and he revealed himself, what would you do? We can't do it alone. We can't. I think Nicodemus is living proof of that. An esteemed teacher, a powerful guy who has to come quietly and alone and hidden in the night. And he just can't get there. He won't let himself go over that hurdle and affirm the need to be recreated. Certainly there must be something that I can do. Charles Spurgeon a century ago said, to wash and dress a corpse is an entirely different thing than bringing it back to life. One thing we can do, and God can do the other. And I think what Nicodemus is trying to do is to dress a corpse. Certainly, that will bring it back to life. But only God, who created us, God to whom we are indebted, God to whom we've sinned against, is allowed to do the recreation, resurrection. This is not something that we can do alone. But it's an entire rebirth in Him that He is inviting us into. And for some, maybe they felt uncomfortable about the term. For some, maybe you've gone to Nicodemus in the night. And you've heard what he said, and that might enhance my life in some way, but maybe I'm not ready to be born again. But if God was standing in your midst, and He showed you His hands, and His feet, and His side, and said, "This I did so that you would be born again," what would you do? I started Lent by saying this is a season of resurrection. It's not a season of death. And you are given the opportunity to see His hands and His feet, His side, His wounds as He goes to the cross for our salvation. He is in your midst, and what will you do? Will you continue to try to transform yourself by your own strength, by your own power? Build your Babel? Or will you put it in the hands of a God who over and over demonstrates His ability to supernaturally renew, to use the least of us for His purposes, to tell a 75-year-old man with no children that he's going to be the father of many nations? To send an old, stuttering murderer to lead His people? To send another murderer and villainous opponent of Christianity to be its leading evangelist? This is what God does with very little. He sets the world on fire. With the most unlikely, He transforms everything. And with the death of His own Son, He gives us the opportunity to be born again. So as He is in your midst, and He invites you into His kingdom, how will you respond? He's calling us to a life of all things new. Will you allow Him to give birth to you again?